Off the Ball Breakfast.
I've used Rory McIlroy's achievement as personal growth for myself. You can overcome adversity to lead your business in Q2.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.
Now, you're very welcome along. It is a special extra pod for this week. You will notice we've got four slots up on the screen as opposed to three. So instead of having to listen to Murphy and Skell talk about High Rocks for half an hour this week, we get to talk to the National Head of Hurling and Willie Marr. Willie, welcome along to the pod, first of all.
Thanks a million. Great to be here.
As Skell shakes his head, because I much prefer to talk about High Rocks than the development of hurling over the next while, but sure, look. Tell me this, Willie, before we get into else, you've had the feet under the table now, so it's a bit over a month now at this stage in the role. I know you've been doing road shows around the country, which we'll talk about in a little bit as well, but how have you found the first few weeks of the job?
Look, just hugely enjoyable, Will, being honest about it. It's a dream as regards having to go to work every day, be it Crow Park or be it around the country or working from home. And the topic of, I suppose, development being hurling. We're all hurling men and people as regards that it's very much part of our lives since we're very, very small in our communities. So to get to work and to get to develop national strategies, find out what's happening around the country is dream stuff.
Did any of this feel in any way intimidating to you? Because we must have had 100 conversations, I'd say, in this podcast about hurling and how it's very difficult to even break this up into different compartments, where maybe you're going to an area where you're trying to start a new hurling club in a predominantly football area, or maybe where there's no hurling heritage. You've got the middle section, which are teams that are trying to catch up at the very top. And also you've got an elite product, which has been going really well, and you want to make sure that that's doing well under hurling's remit. And then when you were talking about taking up the job, you were also adding Camogie into the mix as well. Was it in any way intimidating to look at the very, very broad scope to that job when you took this on?
Yeah, look, absolutely intimidating, because as I said, it's very much it's part of my life and part of, I suppose, your lives as well. That responsibility is not lost on me. And looking at the different areas in the country, and as I said, there, I've been around on road shows and be it involved with teams over the last 15, 20 years and hurling before that, understanding what people are going through as regards to play the game that we all love. So, yeah, breaking it up, I think, is the easiest piece. I had a conversation with a former college lecturer there a couple of weeks ago, and she says, the best way to go about this is break it up. I suppose be as strategic and as thorough as you can, understanding the different needs and the situations that are in different counties. So look, the situation in Kilkenny is very, very different to the situations in Offaly, to the situations up the country as regards in parts of Connacht and Ulster, which I again got a lot of feedback over the last week in Beacon and Garvaghy. So there's a huge amount in that. And again, even within, let's say, the elite structure as regards, you look at the Leinster and Munster Championship, yeah, there's differences there, there's gaps there. And again, you look into counties as regards my own county, Tipperary, you look at certain areas of it, and it's doing well in certain areas, it's not doing so well in other areas. So across the board, Lee McCarthy, Joe McDonough, down through the ring, Rackard and Marr, there's so many different levels to this. So completely, I suppose, understanding the responsibility, but very much, really enthused with the opportunity that I've been given to lead hurling into the future. And look, it's brilliant. So, yeah, but there has been sleepless nights, to answer your question, as regards with the enormity of the task and the responsibility that I've been given. But it's not lost on me.
Yeah, because, when Paul's former coach, or Martin Fogarty, was effectively in this role previously, I don't know if I can call him your direct predecessor, because I think maybe the terms around the role are a little bit different than when he was there. But, he spoke to us previously about kind of how tricky it was. He was going up and finding out maybe how bleak it was in some areas, that he would arrive and realise that there's actually only enough people playing that could be combined over a large amount of clubs to even form one team. The difficulty that they might be an hour away from another club to try and get meaningful games, finding it so difficult, particularly in Ulster, to try and organise underage competitions. Are you taking this slightly differently to maybe the way that Martin was? Because Martin was putting a real focus on trying to grow the game in areas where it was really struggling.
Yeah, I think it's again, testament to the work that Martin did as regards, and I've been in touch with him. He's actually texting me this morning, around different issues. So again, and Paddy Butler before that, a former coach of mine with Tipperary as regards and the work that he did. But yeah, trying to put a different shape on it, try to understand, I suppose, the landscape of actually what's happening and see can we harness the power within the association. So we have 350 people working in games development throughout the country. How do we harness them for hurling as regards to get coaches on the ground? And again, analysing what we're currently doing, looking at where the gaps are as regards, is it personnel? Is it equipment? Is it, as I said, there are teams for people to play? Just, again, a quick stat. There's 27 clubs in Connacht outside of Galway. So that's a very, very small number across five clubs. And similarly in Ulster, there's 390 GAA clubs playing football. There's 112 playing hurling. So, like, you know, the gaps are there to be seen, again, all over the shop. But look, again, looking at where we are, taking a slightly different approach, trying to harness the power of our association, but also, again, huge support from Jarrett on Uachtaráin. Like, this is one of his three priority items. He said it, in Newry in his inauguration speech, amateur status being one, hurling being two, and football review committee being three, and not in that order or anything, but these are his three priority items. And understanding that hurling will be a legacy issue for his firm and whoever comes after. So again, having the hurling development committee under the chairmanship of Terry Riley, and again that power of group of people, including again Paul's former manager Brian Cody, who's the best manager of all time, that kind of personnel involved in the committee. So again, with Jarrett behind it, with I suppose Tom Ryan, senior leadership within the association behind it, with the hurling development committee behind it, with the Emerson development under Shane Flanagan behind it. Look, this is, you know, we're hoping a new dawn to develop hurling within our country.
Is Terry's committee very different to, say, the Football Review Committee? Because in a way, it felt like the Football Review Committee were, I guess, empowered, you know, by Jarlett when they took over, and they had a very specific remit, which is about finding changes to the playing rules that would enhance Gaelic football, and then they seem to have quite a bit of power around that. Is it a very different setup for the Hurling Committee at the moment, Willie, or how does that work?
Yeah, the terms of reference are completely different as regards. With the Football Review Committee, it was looking at rules and rule enhancements that will improve the game, and in fairness, they've done a fantastic job as regards with my untrained football knowledge as regards, but the game is immeasurably better. So our terms of reference are very much growing the opportunities to develop hurling through the country. So that's new clubs. For instance, in the first year of this committee, we've established 45 new clubs through the country. And I'll send you a nice map later on showing and highlighting those, where they are across the country. We've got further funding next year for 45 more. So like that would be a significant improvement in areas where hurling hasn't been played. Also, we understand and recognise existing clubs are under pressure. Like, you know, up and down the country, and you mentioned there across different areas of Ulster, and particularly Connacht outside of Galway. You know, hurling is struggling. We heard it loud and clear in Beacon last Thursday night. Again, 70 or 80 people in a room. Hugely passionate hurling people. Looking for, I suppose, solutions and looking for, you know, how we can get this going as regards in a meaningful way. And that will take a lot of, I suppose, different and innovative ideas. But again, that's what the roadshows are there. Find out, get feedback. Also, we're running the roadshows throughout the country. So we've done Beacon, Garvahy and Belfast. We're now going to do Kilkenny next on the 4th, Limerick on the 6th, Newbridge on the 10th, Cork on the 1st of September. And we're going to finish in Dublin in Croke Park with a penultimate kind of everything pulled together, again, establishing where we are with hurling and where we're going to go.
Could I ask you what solutions they were looking for in Beacon then? Because, like, I presume you're bringing in a lot of, say, Connacht folk who are outside of Galway at that meeting. So maybe that gives us a very interesting snapshot of maybe people that are looking for change within hurling. What kind of stuff were they looking for?
Well, like, I think it's, like, I suppose, help supporting the calendar. Like, they're predominantly football counties. So, like, football is, you know, is king. We're not trying to, again, win all Irelands with teams within this space, but at the same time, we're trying to create more opportunities for children to hurl. That's all we're trying to do. If it doesn't have space in the calendar, that can't happen. Similarly, the games programme, establishing, you know, go games from under 12 right through as regards giving kids games. The only way you get better at hurling is by playing the game and playing it, again, in a meaningful game-like situation against teams that are of a similar standard. So games being another thing. Coaching then, obviously, where we're allocating our resources. A lot of these counties have one person working within hurling, mm-hmm. driving 40, 50, 60, 70 miles a day between different units. You know, huge problem in that. It's not sustainable. And again, the educational sector then, looking at primary schools. You know, what are our participation numbers across the country and not just in these areas? Understanding what they are, understanding what we're trying to, I suppose, move it towards, and putting support in to link that school participation, if we can improve it, with clubs and making sure every young fella and every young girl is a member of a club and then has access to that games programme, as I spoke.
Skell, I don't want to give too much away here, but you told us before, I think it was a relation of yours who was up in kind of Mayo, Sligo direction, and Leitrim. They were covering a lot of schools and clubs, weren't they?
Yeah, he was covering Leitrim. He was brought in, first of all, as kind of an S&C trainee. That was his background from university, and then he was put into hurling development. So it was a tricky proposition for him when he's from a rugby background. So right. But it showed me the challenge involved in getting personnel, first of all, up there, and then getting personnel and people who can make a difference, you know. Because I was going to ask you, Willie, like, you mentioned 45 new clubs. Is that new clubs entirely, completely established, or is that going into football clubs and establishing a team? Do you know what I mean? What did you do?
Yeah, it is that. And primarily a lot of them, there's 17 in Ulster, or 18 in Ulster, 17 in Leinster. Seven of those are in Wicklow, seven in Donegal. So, yeah, established football, I suppose, GA clubs, where hurling wasn't played previously. And sorry, I should have maybe clarified that. It is, again, hurling within football, GA clubs. And look, essentially, they're all GA clubs. So what is a GA club? A GA club is, okay, providing for your members football, hurling, camogie, ladies football. And that's the way it's going to go with integration at the end of 27. So I think it's just trying to establish hurling in those football entities. And again, if we can establish new hurling clubs, fantastic. But it is a difficult thing to do, to go and say, look, we're going starting a hurling thing here. Just one final point on that. And you look at, I suppose, the commitment of Jared Burns or Uachtaráin. Like, he started now a hurling club, or the people within his club in Silverbridge have started a hurling club and a hurling unit. Like, that's, again, that's putting his money where his mouth is. He's backing it up and going after it. And again, look, that's a positive. But look, small steps, but I think an important step all the same.
And tell me, really, did you meet any resistance from existing club members?
Well, I
don't mean that. I'm not trying to draw you out whatsoever. I'm just wondering what kind of challenges you face in establishing new clubs or new teams. Like, is there people that are in these clubs currently and just don't want to see hurling developed, don't want the hassle, or haven't got the expertise and just meet resistance? Or what's your challenges, basically?
Yeah, I think so. But like, I suppose, even taking it from the other side as regards, within all of these units, there's a catalyst or two or three of, you know, people that really love the game, and they're the people that are driving it from their side. Yes, they're probably getting resistance as regards. And anecdotally, I would have heard of stories as regards people weren't too keen, feeling it would dilute the football performance within a unit. But again, like, this is under 12 goal games. This is giving kids the opportunity to play our national sport. I reference a lot. I worked in an American multinational previous to this, and working with a colleague from Kildare, and he said he never got to play hurling. He never got to hold a hurling. Like, that's, again, for a national sport, and again, we're blessed in the areas that we are, in Galway, Tipperary, Kilkenny, Offaly. But at the same time, like, imagine not being given the opportunity to play our national sport and just seeing it on the television, you know, a couple of times a year at that stage. Obviously, it's a bit more frequent now. But at the same time, look, that's the goal. Yes, huge challenges, James, throughout the country as regards, and huge resistance. But at the same time, look, we're part of the same family here, lads. Just this is, you know, we're not trying to take anyone's lunch. We're not trying to do anything. We're just trying to give the kids the opportunity to hold a hurley, play the game, and just, you know, enjoy it as much as, I suppose, of all of us and thousands of kids up and down the country.
Yeah, like, I appreciate that you're obviously in the position where you're trying to get a helmet and a hurley into the hands of all these young people, and that's the primary goal here. Were you disheartened in any way when Liam Griffin brought his motion a couple of times towards Congress to kind of just enshrine it, that there would be hurling available for youths in every club in the country, and it didn't get voted through in Congress?
Yeah, look, there's always a disappointment as regards in. And again, look, you're talking about Liam Griffin, like, probably one of the most charismatic and able, capable individuals, hugely successful in business. You know, he's, you know, just, again, loving the game, and I would have spoke to him around that time as well. But I suppose that's part of my challenge. How can I build that in, or how can we build that in to a national strategy for hurling, that we're not mandating, we're not dictating to anyone. We're just offering. We're trying to provide hurling in that safe environment of GA clubs, which we're all part of. And again, that term, where we all belong. Like, hurling belongs as well. And that's a very big piece, particularly in areas where football is dominant. This can be done. This can be worked through. And maybe I'm being overly optimistic here, but I genuinely think it. And look, I'm driven. I'm passionate. I'm very kind of cognizant of where we are, where we need to go. And again, really kind of validate that now with roadshows regards and have a really true understanding. Again, we've had 200 feedback forms from the 150 people that were at the meetings. And again, just really positive engagement and honest feedback. look, we can change this together. And that might sound, again, grandiose or whatever, but at the same time, it's where we are. Hurling is a game for everyone, and that's what we want to provide.
Very much your philosophy there is you want people to buy into this themselves. Was there any consideration given, because this comes up from time to time, about maybe making financial incentives available maybe to clubs if they were to take up a hurling unit and to maybe start hurling, or was that ever part of the consideration?
Yeah, it is part of the consideration because, like, you know, society has changed. Demographics have given us a challenge that we've never faced before. From looking at demographic data as regards that I presented in Belfast 3 weeks ago, there's more people in County Down than there is in the whole of Connacht. You know, so these are challenges that everybody is moving to the, not everybody, but I think 45% of the country will be living from Belfast to Wexford, or is living from Belfast to Wexford at the moment. So again, those challenges provide new opportunities, yes, but also just, again, we need to be looking after everybody. We need to be trying to find new innovative ways for football, hurling clubs in the West, whatever that is, but we need to be providing. Demographics is offering an opportunity here to envisage maybe to building something new. And that's what we want to do. But financial incentives, yes, I think it's important. By resourcing it properly, by getting, as I said, equipment into children's hands, by supporting volunteers on the ground. And again, the societal thing as regards of our decisive piece of teachers and stalwarts within clubs and being catalysts for hurling all over the country. Like, you know, all the successful clubs have a catalyst or two, you know, 20, 25 years ago in a primary school. It's probably changed a good bit. So how do we build it into the everyday life of a primary school student? We met Minister McEntee last week just to speak through, I suppose, you know, different opportunities and partnerships and where we can partner as regards with the Department of Education. So these are the conversations that are going on. And look, that's the excitement. I hope it's coming across in my voice as regards. There's a lot of stuff here to pull together. We will do it. And again, it's a case of just getting all the information, providing clarity to everyone, putting a plan in place, and then start measuring as we go.
You said previously, you know, like if hurling could work in Coola and they win All-Ireland club titles in an area where, you know, rugby and Gaelic football is very strong, it means it can be probably done anywhere. I was just thinking of Kildare when you mentioned Kildare there. Like, there's this massive opportunity in a couple of weeks' time when they go to Croke Park. They're coming off the back of winning the Christie Ring last year. They've kind of been very close to a breakthrough, a 2A final a couple of seasons ago in the league. Didn't quite happen for them. They're back up into 1B now for next season after getting promoted. Like, there's huge potential there if Kildare were to win that and get into the Leinster Championship. When you talk about demographics, the amount of people in Kildare, the way that things have thrived in Naas over the last while, they've gone down to Paul's County to play a bit of club in Kilkenny to help themselves grow some of the Kildare clubs as well. There's a potential massive breakthrough there if Kildare were to get to senior status, isn't there?
100%. And like, you're looking at all the big population centres around Dublin, and Naas being, again, a huge example of that. I was talking to Damien Lawler, the RT commentator, during the week, and he was on his way down to Callan to play a match. And you know, they're doing that now for 10 or 15 years as regards. And in fairness to Kilkenny, let them in, let them play, give them their opportunity, similarly to Carlow as regards, and coming and playing high-level hurling within the Kilkenny border. So, like, I think it's absolutely brilliant. But I think the work, again, that's gone on in Kildare over the last, from that Naas situation, they've won Intermediate All-Irelands, they've got to the Leinster final, unlucky to lose to Ballyhale. You know, they're hitting a lot of markers as regards, and as you said there, getting to a McDonagh final with Brian Dowling and Richie Roots, that's another big step forward from the work that David Herity had done with them as well. So, like, they're doing all the right things. Look, we need those areas. We need all areas. But at the same time, I think there is massive opportunity. I think that the quote I used as regards around Coola was, if they can build hurling in Dalkey, they can build it anywhere. And that's very, very true in my mind. Again, I'm from a Ballingarry, a small club in South Tipperary. Wouldn't have been, you know, traditionally that big a hitter. But at the same time, through a lot of work through my father, through a guy, Mark Dobbin, through a lot of different individuals 30 years ago, you know, we've driven the club on, and it's a credit to those people, culminating in Liam Cal getting an All-Star in 1986 and now being our senior manager. So, look, it can be done. Again, where big population centres are, and you look at Kildare, you look at Selbridge, you look at Maynooth, you know, you look at Naas, there's big areas there to tackle. And just, I suppose, you led me on to the point of the 20,000 free tickets for the Leinster final for kids. Like, that's the opportunity now. We're after, you know, we're through Derry Kent and Leinster GA, we're after getting this opportunity to put 20,000 kids into Croke Park and let them see their heroes. And I think, look, the opportunity won't be lost there. I know it won't be lost in Laois either as regards, because it was something that we looked for last year with Laois. And again, we've made it happen this year. And similarly with Kilkenny and Galway. as regards trying to get numbers to Croke Park. And my hurling, I suppose, dreams were formed with going to Thurleston, going to Killarney in 87, watching Tip. This is where journeys start. And they were cruelly cut by Galway in 87 as regards when I was in Croke Park and being cruelly beaten there and being beaten in 88. And you know what you're saying? But again,
we haven't forgotten 89, will
you? What?
We haven't forgotten 89 either.
Yeah, well, you know, before 89, there was 87 and 88. That really hurt. But they were the memories. And like again, trying to create those opportunities for kids to develop with their counties in big games. The McDonagh final is going to be brilliant. Like, it's going to be it was a brilliant game last year. It was a brilliant game the year before with Carlow and Offaly. Like, it's a top-level competition. And again, I think Galway and Kilkenny, yeah, that will be a good game. And it'll be, you know, if we could get 40,000 people there plus, that would be huge for the promotion of the game in light of everything else that's gone on in Munster over the last couple of weeks and months.
Yeah, look, Scales an adopted Leinster man when it comes to hurling because the Galway have been in for so long now at this stage. They're fully integrated, so he's 100% in on Leinster at this stage. Murph, we've bemoaned a few times, particularly when it's been Galway against Kilkenny, the crowd that have gone to Leinster finals, and it's led to that kind of debate around whether to receive me in Croke Park. I think this idea of getting 20,000 kids in who are going to cheer along and are going to enjoy the day, they get to see Colm Mannion, they get to see TJ Reid, doesn't matter what county they're coming from, this is a great opportunity to actually get a big crowd into Croke, isn't it, Murph?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Like, when I first heard about it, I was chatting to Willie during the week, and I first heard about it then, it was announced, am I right in saying yesterday, between the Antrim Offaly game, it was announced?
It was, yeah.
The first thing that popped into my mind was, my earliest memories going to Croke Park was, you would travel up on the club bus, you know, 10 years of age, 11 years of age, you might stop off and play Nace on the way, you might play Ballyboden somewhere on the way, you'd pile into the Nally stand as it was then, that's now showing my age, you'd pile into the Nally stand. You know, myself, Richie Hogan, Paddy Hogan, Heath was all of our club mates. You'd watch Kilkenny and Offaly play, or Kilkenny and Wexford, or whoever it was, and you'd go home that evening, you'd be talking through the brilliance of Henry or whoever and Charlie Carter and all these lads. You get home then, you get off the bus and you'd have a puck around in the field waiting for your parents to come and collect you. Like, as a day, it was unbelievable. And the first thing that popped into my head when I heard 20,000 free tickets was what an opportunity it is, particularly for maybe clubs who maybe haven't done something like that, where you go, listen, let's organise a match against Nace, against whoever, maybe Ballyboden, Kilmacud. Like, those clubs, when Dublin playing Kilkenny, our club often hurls against Dublin teams. You see so many teams hurling against them. It's an incredible day. I know there's organising involved, absolutely, and it's a headache for managers and coaches. But in terms of, like, those memories are so vivid for me. And, like, you know, Willie spoke about it there in terms of where he can remember where his, I suppose, love of it started, and that journey of enjoyment and heartache and all those things. I can remember that just as vividly. And, you know, the lads I'm friends with from then, like, it's not to be underestimated. When you there's a lot to be gained from those 20,000 tickets being given out, and potentially for a lot of young kids, a spark being started. For a lot of clubs, potentially a new routine being started of, well, this Leinster Championship might be an opportunity for us to go up the road and have a day out as a club or whatever it may be. There's so many possibilities. So I just think it's fantastic that they've achieved this, because it's dipping the toe in the water of what's possible. And then we'll see after that. And the other thing I will say as well is that it's not as simple for a lot of people, if they mightn't understand. It's not as simple as just flinging open the doors in Croke Park. You know, there is a few hurdles there. I'm not saying there's restrictions or anything, but there is a few hurdles. So it's not just 20,000 tickets. There's a lot goes into organising that as well and getting that over the line. So I think it is fantastic, because I've been part of, and Skehel would agree with this as well, I've been part of seeing Croke Park when it's been really good on Leinster final days or anything, and I've seen it drift as well. There certainly was times where I was there and it was a bit of an echo chamber at times, we'll call it that, because it's a big stadium, and let's face it, you need a good crowd. But like, I'm looking forward to the Leinster final, going up there now, and first and foremost, seeing the energy in the stadium that 20,000 children automatically will bring to that. So it's fantastic. It's a great achievement.
We have to fill it. That's the piece now, as regards. We've got this opportunity. Terry Kent working with Peter McKenna and Croke Park. Like, you know, a lot of work has gone in to actually get this delivered. The boys have delivered it now. So it's up to, again, hurling people, hurling clubs, hurling people within counties to fill buses, to get people into the stadium, to book tickets. I think as of this morning, there was 1,000 tickets booked. So we're starting to move. It's great. So this is an opportunity that we can't leave behind, because I know there's a lot of commentary, and just listened to it on the Sunday game yesterday and speaking through different things and wanting to move Leinster finals out of Croke Park. That's the next step. If this doesn't deliver, I assume that will be looked at, because we are looking for atmosphere. We're looking for, again, if we can't put 40,000 people into Croke Park, it'll be very difficult to justify it next year. And no, it could potentially be in a smaller venue. But look, again, the opportunity is there for everyone. And the dreams, like, again, I'm going into work now for the last month into Croke Park, and I'm like a child with regards, looking around and looking at the field and going out for a gawk and just, you know yourself, just really kind of enjoying and savouring it, because like Croke Park is a very special place to me as regards as everybody else and the memories. And if you talk about the Nally Stand, I was in the Nally Stand for the 1989 All-Ireland when we won after 18 years, and like it was a big deal. Like, you know, there was again, massive kind of piece of Tipperary history as regards and getting to winning the All-Ireland after 18 years and not winning it. And again, look, we all have memories, we all have dreams, but I think it's important that, again, parents and clubs now give kids the opportunity to have those dreams now in for the Leinster final.
Yeah, see...
Sorry, Willie.
Yeah, go on.
Who did you beat in 89, Willie? Just, I wonder.
Antrim.
Okay, grand.
Willie, you mightn't be familiar with this, but Murph often tees up his dig every now and then, right? He's trying to draw you out there, right? So, Paul, just for your limited hurling knowledge, they were in the semi-final when Tony Healy couldn't play. So
I was only born in 89, so I sensed there was a Galway connection there.
You're trying to have a dig at me about the fact that Antrim beat Offaly in one of the biggest shocks of all time. I thought that was the way you were going. Anyway.
Willie, just to fill you in here, the boys are very paranoid some of the times. Like, I just asked a simple question, who you bet in the final, and the boys are, do you know? So you have to have your guard up at all times here, Willie, is all. Sorry, Will.
I'll know for the next time, right? I guess take one bonus review, we can go there, okay?
indeed. I was just thinking when it comes to moving him out of Croke Park, Willie, and like, I do take Joe Canning's point from last night in the telly, because we've talked about it a few times here, that, you know, what it can do for a provincial town. And I was at Galway and Offaly a few weeks back, and it was nearly full. There was about 18,000 in there watching the game, and it was fantastic. It added to the occasion hugely, and it would have been, say, lost if that game was in Croke Park and it was 18,000 sitting in an 80,000 stadium. But I also think there's probably an argument for keeping it in Croke Park, as long as it's coupled with the Joe McDonagh Cup final. Because having been to the McDonagh Cup final the last few years, it creates a reason for that game to be in Croke Park if it's doubled up with the Leinster final. And maybe there's a greater good to be had in actually having that final in Croke Park.
No, I agree. And you know, you're kind of getting into me now about the McDonagh final loss last year. So
No. I said I've been there the last few years.
Very, very motivated day. But no, I take your point. I think, look, the McDonagh is absolutely brilliant. I was fortunate enough to be involved with Laois for the last 2 years, and really enjoyable time as regards, and unlucky not to make a final year one, and then beaten by, you know, a better Offaly team last year by a buck of a ball. And like, that's what you want as regards as players, being able to play in Croke Park, being able to experience that with your people coming up. And again, credit to the huge Laois crowd that went up last year, which was absolutely brilliant as well. So look, really looking forward to it the weekend. I think the McDonagh final is going to be great. The Leinster final is going to be great. Let's, I suppose, to coin a phrase, let's make Leinster hurling great again as regards, and try to, you know, try to get people back into the stadium and get people, you know, get people talking about the game. Because, again, if we can, when we fill and when we get 20,000 kids, bums on seats, we get a big crowd there. I think, look, there's something big going to happen here. And again, players respond, as the boys know, to crowds in Croke Park. And look, anyway, huge opportunity in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, Skelly, are you ready with your Make Leinster Great Again hat there? Yeah,
I was just thinking about merchandise. Yeah. No, I was going to ask Willie. So obviously, the focus on hurling, but is there a bit of a partnership with the Camogie Association to work on Camogie in tandem, or is there any ideas there, or is that in motion or not?
Yeah, it is. I suppose with the integration committee, I think the deadline for integration is 27, the end of 27. So we have, again, we're all working towards that at the moment. I had a meeting, a very constructive meeting with Camogie last week. Again, I think, by the terms of reference for my role, we're working in collaboration with Camogie. Absolutely. And I think it's where it's going. So it's important to jump on and make sure that this is, again, I think it's 600 or 800 clubs have the one club model now throughout the country. So again, on the ground, this is being done. So it's a case of that integration. I'm also chairperson of Bennisbridge Camogie Club. So I have a vested interest with three daughters. So again, look, Camogie is pretty much part of most houses in the country. So it's the same people, the same families. And I think it's just a case of, again, getting that integration piece right. And yeah, there's loads of challenges, but at the same time, I think it's important to be speaking through what they are and potentially finding solutions before their problems arise.
Not getting off the camogie, but just when I think of the Joe McDonough here, because I'm going to summarise a question we got from a few people when we threw the door open for questions, which was the coverage around the Joe McDonough and maybe this feeling that, and I don't know whether this is because they had to get the Tailteann Cup over the line at the time, that it felt like the Tailteann kind of got a few incentives at the start when it came to the games being shown on GAA+, the final being on RT, the semi-finals being on RT, Croke Park being reserved around the semi-finals and the final. Maybe that was helping it to get folded through. While, you know, the Joe McDonough is a little bit off Broadway, and I think Clubber do a wonderful job around it at the moment. But I don't know, maybe this isn't within the scope of your job, but is there any way that maybe someone within hurling could fight for the idea of the more Joe McDonough games being on free to air so people could see them?
Yeah, look, it's something I've had conversations already with the communications department in Croke Park. I've lived it. I've been there. I was managing Leash for 2 years, and seeing how off-Broadway it was scary as regards. You know, it's not shown as regards across the board. Clubber, fantastic coverage of the competition, and again, it's brilliant to bring hurling into everybody's sitting room at home. But it needs more, I suppose. Prime time slots as regards around the showing of the games, because as I said, the quality is top level. I was in Carlow on Saturday for Carlow and Leash, and like, it was a brilliant game. It was genuinely really quality. So yeah, absolutely. There's a work of promotion to do. I've made a representation around the McDonagh for next year as regards very much have a launch, have again similar to what Tailteann do, which wasn't the case with hurling this year. We will have a captain's day as regards around the McDonagh final now to promote Kildare and Leash, but I suppose it's too late for everybody else that was in the competition. But yeah, very much on the agenda, pushing, I suppose, hurling's interests across the association. And looking forward to getting some traction on that, because I think people, including the players, very much deserve the opportunity to showcase their skills, as we saw with the Ulster Club Championship last year, again on RT, the semi-finals and the finals. Like, that brought a whole new light onto Ulster hurling as regards seeing again Dunloy, Schnapneel, Cushendall as opposed to Dunloy. Dunloy were beaten in the final in Antrim, and Portaferry. So again, four or five top level club teams brought it live TV on a Saturday night through RT was a new window and a new lens for hurling supporters throughout the country to appreciate what's actually happening in other parts of the land.
A vote would have to take place if the McDonagh game against the All-Ireland Premier quarterfinals were to be changed. We're talking about format change if that was to happen. But if you could indulge me for a second and say they were decoupled at some point, would there be any thought process maybe about bringing the McDonagh, maybe even the Ring and Laurie Mar, a little bit further into the summer than where they are now? Because I kind of feel where the McDonagh Cup is played currently, particularly, is to try and get it in place so that you can get that game against the third team from each province, as opposed to maybe where it could naturally sit itself. Like, would you think about maybe moving around the calendar where it could have its own space a little bit, rather than being up every week against the other provincial competition?
I definitely think so. I think it's been suffocated as regards with the coverage of Munster and Leinster Championship, and at the same time, like, again, it's getting 3-4 minutes on the Sunday game on a Sunday night, and that's what, you know, the general public are getting to see, which is kind of not a whole lot. So I think so. I think anything to provide a more promotional window for the skills and the efforts and the quality of the teams as regards in that, I think, yes, it has to be in the conversation. So I think it's paramount the discussion takes place, and then it's up to, I suppose, individual stakeholders to see, yeah, is that something we want to do or not? But I think very much to bring it up in the conversation, because, you know, hurling and McDonagh hurling deserves it, as do the Rackard Ring and Mar as regards great competitions, great, again, hurlers within those counties hurling for, you know, a lot less as regards airtime than hurlers within the top counties, and, you know, they're equally important across the association, in my opinion.
There's no simple solution, Willie, to what happens with New York at the moment, because I know the management in Monaghan were talking about it, and I was approached by a couple of the counties a few weeks before the competition got underway, and their frustration was that they were going to play in a 6-team group stage in order to qualify for the knockout stages. New York are over there with a few former intercounty players preparing away. I appreciate they only had, the New York manager was telling us last week, 2 challenge games, and I think they were against teams from Boston, so they weren't really able to prepare. But getting parachuted in at the semi-final stage, I can understand why the other counties would be disappointed, but it's also very difficult, I guess, to create a competition for New York when they're not going to be able to come over here and play for 5 or 6 weekends in a row.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's no simple solution to this as regards, and it's circumstance, and like again, New York are not going to be flying in every weekend to play in a competition. So I think, look, different solutions have to be sought, and those solutions currently don't suit the Monaghans of this world. And look, that's fair. Like, it's not, we're definitely not saying it is, but I think it's just, again, just having the conversation, having the debate post that decision, and post, I suppose, the Monaghan example of being unhappy. So I look, it's on the table, and I suppose that's what Congress and that's what all these institutions within our association do. They debate, they use the demographic demographics on the brain, position which they are to make decisions in the best interests of the many. So I think, yeah, no, look, it's definitely something that we need to look at and continue the debate around.
Skell, you know, we got to see David Glennon play in the McDonagh Cup, so when he spread his wings and went elsewhere, would you ever have imagined that your favourite player, Johnny Glynn, would be in the Laurie Mara Cup?
I didn't know. Just in case you're wondering, Willie, I'm a fanboy of Johnny Glynn.
Okay,
and the guys don't agree. I think, you know, Johnny Glynn has done well for New York too in both courts. In terms of, I can imagine it's very difficult for even the players in New York. I understand that the situation with Monaghan, I get it and I feel for them, but you can imagine being, you know, someone who's had to immigrate for professional reasons, wanting to play the game you love, and just get looking for an opportunity. That's it. So I can see both sides of this. You know, if I was in Monaghan's shoes, yes, I would feel somewhat aggrieved. But in New York's shoes, the guys who are just trying to keep, I suppose, an attachment to their game, it's important that we give them the opportunity to do so. So I agree with you, Willie. Like, throw out the ideas, see what happens, trial it. If it fails, it fails. But keep trying. Don't just abscond from responsibility and say, you know, New York, you can't have participation in the competition. So I'm all for it.
Yeah. It probably speaks to the strength of Munster hurling. The very few of the questions that come into us had anything to do with Munster. So it was like, you're not going to be able to get a ticket for love nor money. They're going through the clubs for the Limerick against Cork game. Good luck getting a ticket. It's not like Leinster where you need to get 20,000 tickets out. Good luck getting one. But Brian O'Carroll was in contact with Willie, and he was saying to us just about one of the things he says that could be a potential easy win, he says, for the hurling committee. He says, I think expanding the Leinster Championship for Laois, Westmeath and Carlow coming up from the McDonagh Cup, potentially Kildare as well, if they show they're good enough, stop relegation from it for a couple of years could be a way forward. I remember a few years back, I'm going to say it was maybe 7-8 years ago, there was like a preliminary group that happened in Leinster where those teams that were, say, outside the elite, i.e. not Wexford, Dublin, Galway or Kilkenny, played for the right to go into the next stage of the Leinster Championship. I'm not sure if it's still possible, Willie, given how condensed the season is now at this stage, but is that an idea maybe worth considering, that there might be a competition where a couple of teams could qualify and the rest still get a chance to play in the McDonagh Cup?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, and again, having been in Laois and seeing ultimately what the players and the level they want to play at over a sustained period of time, like one or two big matches a year is not going to sustain them, particularly in the McDonagh. And that's the way it has been for the last couple of years. So you have a six-team McDonagh. You have three teams at the top, being this year, Carlow, Laois and Kildare. Last year, it was Carlow, or it was Laois, Westmeath or Carlow and Offaly. You know, so like it's essentially a two-tier competition. So I think those counties, yeah, would really benefit from playing a preliminary situation or competition to get into Leinster Championship proper. And again, it might facilitate that what we were talking about there a minute ago, moving the McDonagh, then decoupling it from the All-Ireland series at the end by allowing them to come in at the start and play their preliminary quarter or whatever it is to get a crack at one of the big boys, and then the rest of them go play McDonagh afterwards. So, yeah, I think definitely there's something in that. I know that there has been, I think it was Derry Kent had said it at the Leinster launch this year, and looking to decouple the Leinster Championship or the McDonagh finalists from the All-Ireland series. And, yeah, no, I wouldn't see that as a problem. I think it's probably a good idea.
Just in Derek Kent's comments today, which were on Southeast Radio that I was listening to, so he reckons that a big problem the hurling has right now is that 72% of the teams are finished for the year as we are here on the last week of May, that he feels whatever about putting the year back a little bit, and he thinks maybe August might be the natural cutoff point. He feels that for the sake of hurling, it would benefit if there were more games in June. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. 72% is a big figure as regards to be out of the championship this morning. And that's, I don't know, we were in that situation last year with Tipperary. It's a long summer on the back of that. So I think, yes, I think it's very important that we look at new ways to keep more hurling as we go and really looking at where, okay, how can we extend it? And again, Derek is a very, very smart individual looking at it from a hurling perspective. So I take whatever he says very, very seriously because he's weighed it up well in advance and has looked at all the possibilities. And as I said to you, looking at the best interest of hurling at heart, he's doing a great job as Leinster chair. Again, with the example of the 20,000 free tickets, which is, again, looking outside the box at how things can be done and how can they be delivered for to give opportunities to kids.
This question came in from an inter-county manager, but I stress it didn't come in from Johnny Kelly or Tommy Fitzgerald, in case you think this is for their own interests. It actually came from a manager quite a bit away from those two counties. But he said, what are the plans to get Offaly, Laois and counties at that level consistently back to the top table? He reckons there needs to be a focus at the top end of the middle tier to improve particularly. He says that's where there's already a base and an interest level in hurling, but to push on from where they are now as opposed to looking at subsistence hurling. He says investment and support for key urban areas in those counties and quality in S&C will probably be key. Solve one problem at a time instead of a wide approach, which might make it difficult. So look, you had your experience when you were coaching in Laois and managing the team. Particularly for those teams, Willie, who maybe are just outside the top 10 or in that kind of territory around the top 10, but are trying to close the gap. What do you reckon needs to be done for them?
Yeah, I think even before you start talking about kind of elite preparation and S&C and all the different strands of bringing players through, I think it's a numbers thing. Like, it's a numbers thing as regards the amount of players playing the game at the bottom. So any business is looking at funnel as regards being wide at the bottom, as many players as possible. Huge Go Games program, huge amount of numbers. And just even to go back on the original point, huge appetite for hurling in those counties. You mentioned Offaly, Laois, Carlow. Like, again, Westmeath. Like, the appetite there is unprecedented as regards in comparison to other areas of the country. And yet it's so small in its base. You look at Laois as regards and the numbers, that Sleeve Bloom area in Laois as regards rural depopulation taking place everywhere. Numbers are really, really small. So, again, it's growing that base out by looking at participation numbers, looking at primary schools, looking at Go Games programs, and then building it. That's stage one. Stage two is literally a games program and bringing players through with. And you see the example of the Offaly schools going back 5 or 6 years ago when they beat Kieran's by 2 points. Like, that was the first experience of those Offaly players competing at that level. I can remember even going back to, I was in Kieran's back in the day and playing Burr, who weren't hectic at the time, but obviously coming off a period before that. But again, this Offaly team was primed and ready to go, well used to playing high-level matches, and then obviously pulling that through, beating the minor All-Ireland, winning the under-20 All-Ireland last year. Again, unlucky this year as regards. Again, Kilkenny's low base will still always be very, very high. And you look at, again, Tip and Kilkenny back in the final again. So I think it's literally building your participation numbers, that funnel wide as possible, building a program of games and everything else to go with it, be academies, be it schools, programs. But I think the school is a massive vehicle here for driving high-level hurling across counties. And if that's combined schools teams for a period of time, it's not the complete answer, but it does give kids the opportunity to play in areas that are not successful. And the final piece of that then is building out that elite program and building out better S&C, better athleticism, better tactics, better video, whatever the model is. It's, you know, it's probably a three-pronged approach, but that's over 10 years. So I think there's an awful lot in that. And this isn't a one-size-fits-all. But to the original point, there's huge fertile ground in those middle counties that need to be helped and developed and brought through. Again, up the country, participation numbers are the only probably answer at the moment. In that middle county, it's a combination of everything. And then even in the Lee McCarthy counties, there is issues across counties. It's, again, looking at different gaps. That's what we want to do with those roadshows I mentioned earlier as regards finding the blockages and the barriers to hurling wherever you are and try to build that into a plan.
Because those roadshows are probably going to take a very different shape depending where you are. So the ones you've done, very much looking at areas that are probably trying to develop, and maybe it's those exact areas that are trying to get a new club. When you're going around to the Hotel Kilkenny and you're going to Cork and going to Limerick and maybe the last one at Croke Park, they might be very different conversations to the ones you've had with the first three.
but there'd be very different conversations in the room. Like even that night, Paul Delphi Kenny was looking at the registration forms there. 20 or 30 lads from Laois coming, 20 or 30 lads from Carlo coming. There's a couple of lads from Offaly coming down. There's a couple of lads from my place coming out from Ballingarry. There's a couple of lads coming up from Waterford. And then you have the situation in Kilkenny as regards hugely different needs, urban and rural as regards. You look at the city bursting at the seams, I suppose three clubs and all the players that are there, and I think there's a couple of thousand houses going in there around the Dixburg area now. That's a different challenge to where we are out in Bennettsbridge here at the moment, where one primary school and the numbers are small, probably similar to Paul up in Danesport. So they're all issues. So the issues are different everywhere, but there's massive differences even within whatever room you're in.
Like Murph, even on that in Kilkenny, so chatting to Shefflin there a while ago, he was saying to me about even around Ballyhale that like it's getting to a point the families are getting smaller, and he was saying this is going to become a big challenge for them as it comes down the track, and he says they're feeling it a bit at underage at the moment already. Like that kind of sprawl of the city is going to create a challenge for, I guess, some of those prominent clubs that we've been, you know, remembering how successful they've been. They're going to have a strain on them over the next while, aren't they?
They will, yeah. Well, it's been seen as it is, you know, a few years ago there, maybe 2 years ago, as part of a review panel with Mick Dempsey. Well, Mick Dempsey headed it up as part of underage structures within Kilkenny, because again, it was something that hadn't been looked at in quite a few years. And as you do with anything that you're really passionate about, you review it every couple of years and see, okay, was there anything we're doing good here that we want to keep? Or is there anything that down the road is going to cause us issues? No more than what Willie is talking about there. So with that, like, you know, when we spoke to clubs, we spoke with three delegates from each club, and we had different seminars, and we tried to draw out as much as we could into the open. And one of the things was simply that, you know, when you're in the city, it's fantastic that you have great numbers and you have kids coming down, but there's very little real estate to expand once those numbers start to get really big. And where do you go from there? One of the benefits, I would say, I call it a benefit, is, you know, when those numbers get so big, some of the maybe smaller clubs just outside the city bounds start to see a little bit of influx of people, like Three Castles in Kilkenny. I'm not going to speak for them now, but they've had a bit of recent success in terms of they had one adult team, but they've come up between Junior C and Junior B now, and they're actually doing quite well. I think they're not too far away from the borough, and they might be seeing some of that trickling out their way. But then if you go down south and you go to Owen Murphy's club and Glenmore and Sleaverue and these places who are on the border closer to Waterford City, their dynamic is completely different to what my dynamic is in Danesport. And even if you just go 5 miles into the city, it's completely different again. So the thing is about it, and it's interesting, one of the things Willie said there about, you know, clubs joining together. Willie's living in Bennettsbridge, my neighbouring club. We joined together at minor in around 98, 99. One of my cousins was playing on the team. Now you would find it very hard to imagine that there was ever a time that Danesport and Bennettsbridge ever had to join together for any reason. We've always been great rivals. We've always had great rivalry. However, the demographics at the time dictated that something had to be done that had never been done before in order for everybody to benefit. And it was a springboard that really launched both clubs on. And we hurled senior for a decade. Bennettsbridge got back to senior. They won a minor county final a few years later, minor A county final. And they've remained senior and will be competing for senior titles. Both of our underage teams are going really well. But for that small snapshot in time, something was required that hadn't been done before. And we did it, and it benefited everybody. So like one of the things that just, you know, that Willie is saying there that's just echoing in my mind is that for any club around the country or anybody starting a club or whatever your situation is, A, look at what has been done somewhere else that may benefit us, or B is, just because it hasn't been done before doesn't mean it can't be done in future. There's no, and something that I think keeps ringing true here is when we ask Willie a question, there's nothing off the table, nor should there be anything off the table. So you can look at it in any county, and I think just to bring it back full circle, Will, to what you're saying, Kilkenny has its own, let's say, we won't say issues, but Kilkenny has its own dynamic and its own way of that we have to do X, Y, and Z to try and improve it. And then if you look at Laois is quite split then in terms of where your football is located and where your hurling is located. And there's many other counties that would also speak of that. So it's really a case of looking at your own house, saying, what could benefit us? And even if we speak about what happened, or in the first 10 minutes, we spoke about Kildare. Kildare came down the road to us and competed against Kilkenny club teams, went back up the road, and have actually done better than a lot of Kilkenny club teams have now when it comes to senior adult hurling. Now, when you look at Naas have competed in a Leinster final in senior adult hurling. My club hasn't. There's lots of clubs in Kilkenny haven't. They've reached that status because they decided to get innovative about what they were doing. People said, do you know what, let's give this a crack. And I think that sentiment echoes a lot of things we're speaking about here, that, you know, you can do nothing and it'll remain the same, or you can roll the dice and do something. And at least if one thing doesn't work out, you can turn around and say, well, we tried and okay, we know now, but let's move on to the next thing. So I know that's a long-winded answer to what you're saying there, Will, but when Willie has that night in Kilkenny, I completely get what he's saying there, that, you know, you'll have lads from Carlow who have four senior adult clubs, if I'm correct in saying that at the moment, maybe or four senior, yeah, I think I'm correct in saying that. Yeah. Waterford will be up, Tipperary will be up, Kilkenny, etc. The dynamic will be different, but it's a melting pot for people just to, you know, compare notes, see what's going on, and maybe if a few solutions come out of that room that night, a few bits of food for thought, well, it's been a success. And that's the benefit of it.
Yeah, because I'm not sure how you do it, Willie, but go on.
No, I'm just on that. We're all bound by our love of the game, our love of place. But sometimes that love of place and maybe looking over the ditch at the neighbour looks, and we don't want them to be, you know, we want to be better than them or whatever. That's natural competitive piece, but for the betterment of hurling, I just think we need to do something. We need to be innovative in what we're doing. What we've done before, again, with the demographics and the societal changes that we've discussed, like, are not going to work. So we need to be offering something to kids and parents in our communities that's a little bit different and a little bit innovative. What that is, again, that's the feedback we're looking for. And again, just on those roadshows, like, again, Jarlath, hugely committed, you know, wants to be at all the roadshows. He's going to be at, I think, six of the eight, which is fantastic. Tom Ryan was up with me in Belfast or in Garvahy there last week. You know, really kind of interested in the hurling dynamic and what's actually happening, looking for that feedback from people. But I think just stop looking kind of maybe over the ditch and going, geez, I wish I had what they had, rather than going, okay, how can we get something better? How can we get something that's fit for purpose? Even the game, right? How can we make our game more accessible to younger kids? And that, God forbid, getting away from the 15-a-side. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not saying that that's the way to go, but is a ten-a-side tournament as regards, or ten-a-side games, better as regards to bring kids through? I don't know, but there's something I suppose has to change. But just the interesting piece on the NAIS situation, like, okay, they made the jump. They were innovative in what they did. They were backed up then by huge numbers as well. So it was a perfect match as regards for what's happening. Again, the dynamic, if you look at Tipperary at the moment, you look at Loughmore Castellini, former double county champions twice in the last 10 years. Like, they're joined, I think, with mine now at minor. So, because again, they don't have numbers to move it forward. So I just think we need to be just innovative in our approach. The number one thing is our kids play the game, they have a consistent games program, and they're supported by the association. So again, in a nutshell, that's the answer. But there's a lot of pieces to that.
Yeah, like, I can almost guess the answer to this when I saw one of the questions that came in from Sports Daily, which was about disadvantaged areas and DESH schools at the moment. So, again, saying, is there a possibility where the GAA can provide some resources maybe to get past the barriers for entry, you know, helping to buy club memberships maybe for players, provide hurleys, provide helmets to these type of schools? I'd imagine that's a fairly simple answer, that if the money's available, that would be a good way to spend the money.
Yes, and I think it's just so important as regards that we don't forget anybody as we go, and that's the big piece, that we're connecting as many people as possible. Look, we don't have an infinite supply of money. That's we don't have. But look, again, met Minister McEntee last week. Very, very constructive, I suppose, talk on potential partnerships moving forward, and, like, you know, DESH schools and schools in urban areas, hugely important to everyone and society, and it's not our job as an association, but it's something we do as a byproduct of the games we provide. So look, it's something that is definitely on the table. I think, again, every boy and girl deserves the opportunity to play again, and if that's a barrier through not having equipment, look, that should be something that we take away. Just on that point, we spend huge amount of money every year on our hurling helmet scheme. It's something that, you know, we're trying to revitalize now, and it's a lot of money. So we just need to be, I suppose, creating more value for members and getting more hurls and slitters and helmets on kids' heads and in their hands to hit balls. That's what we're looking to do.
I appreciate this one is going to sound like the final round of The Apprentice with Alan Sugar, but this one came into us, which is, what is an overall benchmark for success then of a plan? How will you know within 6, 8, 12 months? I mean, that's a fairly short period, but look at the three years, 5 years of the plan to know that it's working. So the questionnaire was more like, so it doesn't go 10 years down the line. It felt like it didn't meet the benchmarks. What will be the benchmarks, Willie? Are you still developing them at the moment with the conversations?
look, again, as we said, everything's on the table at the moment. We're still developing those benchmarks. Just again to highlight, we've 45 new units, hurling units set up in the last 2 months. That's a big number. I sound like I'm looking for election in the Dáil here as regards to what I'm delivering for the hurling public. It's a big number. And again, if we could deliver the same next year, fantastic. That'd be great. But I think, look, participation is number one in certain areas. So again, I'm going to divide it and I'm going to answer the question in a long-winded way. Bottom counties looking for that participation, building more numbers. Middle counties looking for participation, more numbers, and trying to develop a funnel of high-quality players coming through. And then, as we mentioned, the different issues in the different areas of the top counties. Everything is not perfect. And even the example of Limerick at the moment, there's a regeneration project going on in the middle of the city as regards looking at establishing four older clubs that went back junior or had no underage, trying to get that going as well. So, again, apart from all the super clubs down there and all the work that's going on in the Napiershiks and the Monleans and the Moogrohers, like, they have issues as well. So it's looking and identifying the issues in specific places, and we want to do that by, as I said, our roadshows going forward.
I'm going to wrap this into one question, because Donal O'Cusick was obviously talking about it last night about the tackle, in his opinion, not being rightly defined. And we get this in regularly when we end up talking about decisions from the weekend before and spare arm tackles and all that type of stuff. There's someone's asked here, Michael Nagel, it's not Don Logue under a nom de plume, I promise. He says, does Willie's remit include a review of hurling rules and possible trials of new rules like the FRC had in football? So is that on the agenda if you were to look at, say, the hand pass, because we get loads of questions about throws, and say the way that the tackle is executed and the rules around the tackle? Do you, at the moment, whether it be you or the committee itself, have any kind of scope to look at the playing rules of hurling right now?
Yeah, look, it's something we have looked at as regards with the HDC and particularly the hand pass. Like, that's after going to Congress twice now and it's after being defeated. Like, is there a throwing in the game? Yeah, there is. But I think players are so skillful that they're doing it so quickly. The referee needs help here. I think that was even the conversation yesterday after the game, that there's a certain amount of the game has gone so fast that they require some assistance. And will they get it all right all the time? Absolutely no. But at the same time, they are trying hard. And a side note, I was over in Abbottstown there 3 weeks ago watching the referees training. And like, they did a session that inter-county players, and I know myself, if I tried to do it at this stage, it mightn't end too well. But they were busting themselves. They were really going hard. They trained hard. They had a bit of dinner. And then they went upstairs for a two-hour review meeting. And it was fairly no holds barred as regards what was happening. So they're working hard at what they're doing. Do they get all the decisions right? Absolutely not. Am I frustrated as a Tipperary fan sometimes, as I was coming out of Cork as regards 3-4 weeks ago when Darren McCarthy was put off? Absolutely. But that's the nature of the game. And look, they make split-second decisions. They're doing their best. I think, in fairness, particularly the hand pass and the throw, like, that's been well marshalled in the last while. Yes, there's instances in every game where you're going, oh, when you slow it down, you can see it. But in real time, it's very, very difficult to catch.
Would you support the idea of video officials or video reviews coming in? Because this obviously comes up a few times during the championship each year. How would you feel about it?
Personally, I think anything that can help, I think, is an advantage. You look at, again, the excitement of 2014 All-Ireland when Bubbles had that free to score or not score. And I technology made the right decision, as opposed to, I think it was Richie Benison in 1971, they say it's wide and it was a score. Mm-hmm. Limerick won the All-Ireland in 1973. So these are things that are part of our game. With technology, can be improved. So I think there's definitely scope for it. I think, but again, I know VAR is so controversial in soccer that you don't want to go down that road. But I think anything that can help, I'd be open to it personally. But at the same time, I suppose, within our association, it's democratic decisions. It's not on one man or one.
Yeah, because I got an email from Donica Hussey, who's a referee. He says, I'm a bog standard hurling referee.
My little dog got a haircut today, and he's going mad here.
I thought that was
Gael
there, actually.
Yeah, so did I for a second. Yeah. I thought maybe it was more cows running around in the field or something. But you're not.
I'm watching. No.
But Dunica said he's a bog standard hurling referee. He said about the throw, so you've already covered the throw, but just to make that point, he says, I'm known to be tough on the hand pass as a referee, but even now I'm starting to feel like, why bother? Every game is being blighted by illegal passes. He says the rules state a clear separation needs to be there, not a millimetre of a separation when slowed down by the guys in the Sunday game. It's just getting to the stage now where we're going to forget about the hand pass as a skill. He says, well, the tackle is a mess currently, recency bias, but yesterday in the Cork, Waterford and Galway Dublin matches, it was more akin to American football at time. Players taking more than four steps, so getting up decent speed, and then once they're wrapped up, the only option is to throw the ball away. The rule book states that the only contact is shoulder to shoulder. I think this is a domino effect. Steps equal more speed, which in turn equals a rugby style tackle is the only option to try and stop a player, which means the only way to get rid of the ball is to throw it. He wants to know, is Willie happy for the game to be played like that? And if he is, could he ask about the rule book then, that potentially that could be looked at to try and match up with the games on the pitch? So, like, is that something you need to consider, Willie, this kind of definition around the tackle, given that, I suppose, the nature of tackling has changed quite a bit?
Yes, possibly. And I suppose, it's again, it's a change in the game in the last 20, 30 years. The athleticism of players has probably exasperated a lot of those things as regards around the tackle, around throwing the ball. But at the same time, just, again, coming out of the All-Ireland last year, I know it's the top level of our game. I was absolutely buzzing as regards, after watching, you know, 70 minutes of hurling, extra time. It was just, the game was absolutely amazing. I had a few American colleagues at the match last year, or at the semi-finals, and the same thing, just absolutely blown away with his spectacle. The game has never been as good. Like, that's, I don't know if that's said enough as regards, like, the athleticism of our players, the quality of the scores, the quality of the striking. Like, I watched a match I played in, go back to it 20, 30 years ago at this stage. But, like, I was kind of going, oh, that was an absolute classic. And I watched it back and I was like, geez, this was absolutely terrible stuff. The striking was terrible. Scoring was brutal. Like, it's, we happen to be a myth in our heads that the game was brilliant years ago, and the competition and the roar of the crowd and the clash of the ash and all these other bits and pieces. But, like, our players and everybody involved in it have brought this game to a level that, you know, we didn't think was possible. So, yes, there's problems. Yes, there's loads of issues around the place. But at the same time, I think it's important that we recognise where the game is at the same time. It's like, it's not like football after the All-Ireland last year, where they needed to do remedial change to the game to make it more watchable, which they have and which they're more successful doing. But our game is in an unbelievable place. And I just, yes, there's issues. Yes, there's red cards missed. Yes, there's throws missed in certain individuals. But, like, our referees are doing their very best. And I think, again, just a bit more, like, maybe latitude on where we are and what we have as opposed to what we don't have.
Yeah. If you ever watch GA Gold, for every time you see Jimmy Barry Murphy double on a ball and it flies into the net and that makes the highlight reel forever, you will get angry every time you see a wing back just randomly pulling on the ball and giving away possession when you watch the modern game. You're just thinking, why are you not picking it up and keeping the ball? It's maybe not as good as memory might think. Nostalgia is heroin for all people, ultimately. Tip back, and that is a fact. I had a feeling you'd like this name. Would the GAA ever consider bringing back the Ulster Hurling Championship? So I'm not sure if that means, Willie, that would be, say, Antrim being involved, given that they've been high up in the senior ranks over the last while, or whether there's a possibility to bring it back with all the counties playing in it. But would you look at bringing back the Ulster Hurling Championship down the road?
Yeah. Just first of all, Tip, we're not back. We're not back until we're going up the steps to Hogan Stand. I think that's just a charity fight for everybody. Liam has done an unbelievable job, and we're back competing, which is, again, what we wanted. But we're only back when we're winning. So I suppose that's just a point of clarity. But absolutely, the Ulster Championship, I think it's important that every region has its, again, championship going on. Look, it's where do you fit it in is the piece. And it's back to the original argument as regards, like, it's just, it is difficult. It's time to actually fit it in. But I would definitely be in favour of an Ulster Championship. And again, okay, how can we be more innovative here as regards on what we're doing, when it's played, and the format it takes? I think, you know, we should be, again, piloting different ideas around the Ulster Championship and other championships that have slipped off the radar.
This is the last listener question, and by all means, Murph and Scale, ask whatever you want after this one. But Carl was in contact. He said, could project players potentially revive hurling in some weaker counties, like foreign pros have done for Irish rugby? And I know this annoyed a few people online underneath it, but again, all conversations are available here. Allow up to 3 over 25s from stronger counties who haven't played senior that could potentially join a lower tier team. is that potentially there to raise the standards for some of the weaker counties? I don't know what you feel about that, Willie, about potentially allowing lads to transfer into a smaller county to try and bring up the senior team to a better standard.
I think yes, on the proviso that they're maybe living in the county or there's some connection to the county. I think there has to be some sort of criteria on it as regards you can't be just bringing five lads from Cork to play with Longford on a Sunday and straight back down with no real impact on actually what's happening in that example. So, I'm all for, as regards looking at innovative ideas and how we can make our hurling better, how we can improve the standards. If that's like, you know, so the boys know between players in Galway and Kilkenny, and I know certainly in Tipperary, a lot of guys of high standard not making the senior panel. And I think if they were willing to have the opportunity to play inter-county hurling, and again, they're doing something positive for the game in another county, I think that would be very much on my agenda. But at the same time, it's something, I suppose, that has to be brought through the proper channels within the association, and I'd be open for it. But it's trying to get that, I suppose, operationalized into reality is the piece that might be a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, sorry, Murph and Skell. I just said I get through all the listener questions before I give you a chance to open the floor here. So I shall sit back and have a sip of the water. You two can go wherever you want with this now.
Well, I don't actually have a question, but I do want to. This is just how long we're on the podcast now, where I recognised Willie threw out a fact at the start of the pod, and I guarantee. Yeah, Skell definitely Googled it. So this is how well I know it. Willie, when you threw out the fact that Down has a bigger population than Connacht, I looked at Skell and I said, he's gone Googling this.
Down have 527,000 people and Connacht have 522. I was like, what?
I said it at the time. I was like, I can't bring this up because it's going to kill the whole thing and it'll distract from the whole lot. But I was like, we're doing this too long when I can recognize it. Willie, haymaker of a stat. It's outstanding.
Yeah.
But I was like, Skell can't leave this.
No.
It was just, I was before the meeting in Beacon, and I was actually going, gee, Mac, that's again, recognising where I am and the demographics and the societal changes in the west of Ireland. And again, just and I know probably from a hurling perspective, looking at Down, I suppose half a community in Down will play hurling. So it makes that stat a little bit more redundant. But at the same time, it's just, again, just showing where the population are moving to.
Jesus. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I thought he meant, did he say Galway? Did he say...
I was right with the stat.
Tell me, does your you know, you spoke about the different tiers for different counties, Willie. Have you to balance your efforts? Like, have you to put more focus on one than the other? Like, the demographics in with regards to club challenges, even in our own county, let's say, the East clubs are dwindling numbers. Like, is that getting an equal focus on building a game in Roscommon? Or how do you split your time and effort?
Yeah, I think at the moment it's literally seeing what's happening. And again, it's yes, there's a focus on those counties. The Dublin to Galway line and up is the line we're working off. And yes, there's more emphasis on that. But I think this has to be a head of hurling for everyone. And that's not just giving another political speech, but it has to engage, again, all stakeholders. It's important to hear exactly what's going on around the country for the entirety of hurling. Like, if we're focusing on just counties up the country, like, again, counties down the country are going to go, oh, well, that's not really, this isn't really for us, is it? So it's important, look, to bring everybody in. And that's, I think, Hurling United is more powerful as regards than fragments left, right and centre. So just to your point, what we're doing at the moment is looking at operational plans throughout the country. So every county will produce an operational plan, present through Games and Development. They have their 6-monthly reviews going on in the last couple of weeks and more to come in the next while. We want to build in a hurling arm, a section into those accounts. If it's not already there, it's in the majority of them, okay? So what I'm looking to do, and I'll be going out meeting individual counties in the next while, looking at, okay, Galway, what's happening? What's your participation numbers? Again, going through that funnel, looking through the games programme, looking where you are, as regards competing at the highest levels, your academy structure, your school structure, everything to do with that. And okay, how can we build in 3 or 4 real measures on that? That, again, you're analysed every 6 months and say, okay, you're hitting them or you're not. And then funding as a result is incentivized towards hitting them or not. And you're not taking money away from everybody, but you're going to go, okay, can you give me a real life plan for Galway? What's happening? Where we need to go? Have an understanding of that. And then build into the overall country situation. And then we hopefully get 32 of those in that instance with completely different needs, and we're again operationalizing those plans going forward. That's a big ask, but again, that's what we're working towards, and I think it's important to have that structure on it. And back to one of my original points was, again, how do you eat an elephant? Small pieces. You're breaking it down. You're working through games and development. Again, at provincial level, every province has a games manager. Okay, they're managing the games managers within the counties. They're being held accountable to the games program and everything to do with that. So again, just trying to put structure on what we're doing. And again, we're trying to, I suppose, move the dial everywhere as opposed to specific areas.
Forgive a business style question there, but just how the kind of the power flows. So do you kind of report directly to Tom Ryan then, or how does the kind of structure work as in where you fit into the GAA family right now?
At the moment, I'm reporting to Shane Flanagan, head of games.
Okay.
So I suppose working within that 350 strong personnel throughout the country, that's what I suppose we're working towards. Those operational plans from a games perspective are ran through the games and development department. So that's where I'm reporting in. Again, with a dotted line to Tom, with you know very regular contact with Jarlath, understanding everything that's going on and keeping them informed of actually what's going on as well. So I'm reporting into Shane, but at the same time, it's a very kind of close relationship with senior leadership within the organisation. They're keenly aware of what's happening and where we want to go.
Jarlath's a remarkably hands-on president, isn't he? And I don't mean that as any kind of slight on any of his predecessors, but like it's not just ceremonial for him. He seems to get very much organised in, I won't say totally the weeds here, but he tends to kind of put himself into all these different projects, and he has a very much a genuine willingness when he does get involved with something there.
Yeah, no, look, in my experience, Jarlath today has been nothing but positive, hugely impressive individual. And the thing I really liked about him as regards to the start, he named out his three pieces that he was going to be, I suppose, looking at, or three priority items: hurling, football rules, and amateur status, and working towards all of them as regards through the tenure of his presidency. But very much hands-on, very much, I suppose, providing leadership for our organisation across the board. And I couldn't say enough about the support I've been given to date, and I suppose looking forward to bringing a potential hurling plan to them for full backing, and again operationalizing that over the coming weeks and months. And but again, yeah, really hands on, really interested, and again a huge, a brilliant representation of, I suppose, us as a GAA family.
I know the two boys are mad keen to break down why Waterford can't get out of a group stage in Munster and so on from the weekend just gone by. So we will get to that in a sec. But lads, you've anything else you want to throw at Willie for the end of our conversation number one here before we go?
No, I think we've grilled him enough at this stage now, the poor man.
He was ready. He was ready. you were prepared, Willie.
The only thing I'll say, Will, is a few weeks ago, I met Willie for a coffee, and I said, I'm meeting a Tipperary man living in Bennisbridge. I said, there's two reasons this could be an ambush now, but he didn't. So I was
No. I met a Tipperary guy the same day in another coffee shop in Tipperary, or in Kilkenny, and he said, yeah, no, I really liked your interview recently, whatever, wherever it was, and the one thing he says, what are you doing living there? And I was there for my look. That's a compromise with my wife and everything else as regards. But it was that was the only black mark against me as regards to your that's where you're living. So it's county boundaries run through, I suppose. But it's really enthused. I really appreciate, I suppose, the opportunity to come on here. I didn't genuinely feel grilled as regards. It's a lot of the stuff I'm living at the moment and working through. I've no notes in front of me here. Everything is far that stat that I had in my head, but it's something that I love doing. It's something that I'm really passionate about. It's something that I want to, I suppose, provide leadership that, again, the next generation and, again, more kids have the opportunity to play our game. Our game gets better over time. As I said, it's in an unbelievable place, but I appreciate the promotion you guys do as well for the game overall. I mightn't agree with a lot of the stuff, or some of the stuff that you're speaking through on a weekly basis. Oof. But at the same time,
what's the most egregious thing we've ever said then? There's a real question for you. What have you taken exception with?
I think it was Offaly stance last year after beating Leash in the McDonagh. That was I was put out by that. But that was really kind of close to the bone. But no, look, it's what you're doing is amazing. Genuinely, I'm not put out very often by what you say. But again, it's important that we have this debate around hurling and that we're all discussing it, that we all have a voice, and that's ultimately what we're trying to do with everybody around the country through these road shows and I suppose into my tenure as head of hurling with the GAA.
Yeah, look, I didn't work at the final last year. I went as a fan. It was very enjoyable, that Offaly Laois game. And I still joke with Aaron Dunphy about the fact he probably could have got away with steps with a different referee, but that's life, you know. Skell, you've no bolters before we finish, do you?
No. I was going to take a back seat now and do the Homer sense.
Fair enough. Well, look, Willie, thanks a million for joining us. We'll stick up the details of those roadshows. We can help maybe to get a few more people along to them over the next while. There, of course, a few coming up in the next few weeks as well, so I'll stick them up with the graphics as well. But thanks a million for your time. And look, we will chat again as things progress for you as well. Thanks a million.
Look, thanks again. Okay.